Well, our final guest this morning is Ryan Cunningham. He is a Métis, Plains Cree, Scottish actor, producer, director from Edmonton. He's the artistic director of Native Earth Performing Arts and the co-founder of Alberta Aboriginal Performing Arts. And Ryan is the assistant director of the Rez Sisters. Please welcome him to Before Fall. Morning. It's great to talk to somebody from Native Earth Performing Arts. A lot of us know of it from afar, and I'm told it's Canada's oldest professional Indigenous theatre company. You're the new artistic director. Can you tell us a bit more about your company?
Native Earth was became a registered not-for-profit in 1982, and charitable status a couple years later, and we call it Canada's oldest professional Aboriginal theater company. There have been other theater groups before Native Earth, the Bodge Majig in particular, on Manitoulin Island in Wiki, where the Rez Sisters takes place. At the time of writing this play, Thompson Highway was the artistic director at the time. Some of our greatest living Aboriginal playwrights have all been artistic directors over the years as well. And I've been working there personally as an artist, actor, artistic associate for about a decade, and it's a real honor to take the role as artistic director.
It almost feels like it was meant to be. Did Thompson Highway debut it at your theater?
Well, it was a co-production between. Native Earth Performing Arts didn't actually have its own space. It was sharing offices in the Native Center, Canadian Native Center in Toronto, and that's where their offices were. They have a gymnasium gathering space with a stage in there, so that's where they were doing their original plays, and they partnered with another independent theater company in Toronto to develop and produce The Rez Sisters.
We heard from Peter on the significance of this. I wonder how significant you think the Rez Sisters is in the history of modern Aboriginal plays in this country.
It's extremely significant. It was one of the first times that mainstream audiences saw our stories. Mainstream theater companies then remounted it and it toured to some of the biggest theater companies in Canada. So it was groundbreaking. Literally, and exposed the talent and the artistry that existed in Canada that hadn't had the ability to get through those doors, to stand on those stages, and we heard from Peter, it had enormous effect on the theater artists in the country.
The mainstream audience versus the First Nations audience. This might tell me if this is a false setup here, but I just wonder if you think that this or any of your other productions get different reception, different treatment, different understanding based on who the audience is.
Oh, definitely. I don't say that in a negative or critical way.
Sure.
There's always a lot of humor in our stories, and sometimes that humor isn't in non-Aboriginal audiences. Sometimes there needs a permission to laugh at some of the jokes that are put on stage, and so there's just different context. It's cultural context for the audiences.
I like the permission to laugh idea. How do you give an audience permission to laugh? Is it something that's written in?
You hire your friend who's the plant in the audience, and the first joke in the play, they laugh really loud. And then everyone's like, oh, we're allowed to laugh at this. Okay.
That sounds like a great job, actually. Now, there's a character in the Rez Sisters, as we have heard, called Nana Bush. Now, can you tell us a bit more about Nana Bush, both within the context of the play and in First Nations culture mythology? Can you expand on Nana Bush?
Yeah. I'll expand on what was mentioned before. Nana Bush, or the trickster, as it's known in many different Native cultures, is this being that straddles the spirit and the human world, much like in a lot of mythological stories around the world. There's always a being that straddles those worlds and can, as we said before, Jesus is one of those characters as well. And we have Wasegichuk as well is another very similar trickster figure. And the role in our mythology is that it's a trickster in that it's it I don't want to refer to the chaos of the world, but it gives a bit of order to the chaos that happens. When we come up to challenges in our life and obstacles that we have to overcome, a lot of the time we say it's the trickster that's putting those challenges in front of you to grow as a human being, to learn a lesson that you might need to overcome those challenges. But there's always a bit of mischievousness to it. There's always a jester quality, a joking quality that is done in that as well, in that these are not just negative events, even though they can be perceived as negative events, because ultimately what happens on the other side of that and moving through is a pot of positive growing experience that can bring people together as well.
I wonder about the Rez Sisters having been written in 1986. I wonder how you think it resonates today, almost 30 years later. Are all of the issues, and I know, and we heard quite succinctly from Peter why it's not a political play specifically, but I wonder whether you think some of the surrounding issues just in the country in general and for First Nations have changed significantly since then, or if it's still largely as relevant now as it was almost 30 years ago.
Yeah, I agree. It is still relevant. And we had a discussion about this with the cast in one of the early days in rehearsal about what the relevance of it. Could you adapt it to happen in modern times? Well, not really, because there's just so many references to that period and that time, and it was a story of that time. But some of the challenges are definitely still there. I mean, just down to paved roads on reserves. You go to Soutina in Calgary, which is in the city limits. Yeah. You turn off that intersection, all of a sudden you're in a paved, a dirt road. And as we see with Idle No More movement, and as Tantu was talking about, just having that voice in mainstream media, having voice on those tables that are making decisions in this country, just as in reserve, some of those voices aren't being there in band council, those challenges are still there, most definitely. And even down to where Native theater was in the 80s, we still do not see Native theater on the main stages to reflect the culture that is in this country. So I think there are a lot of similarities, a lot has changed, but the challenges are still the same.
So back to where we started then, you're the new artistic director for Native Earth Performing Arts, and in what direction do you see the company going? Where would you like to take it?
In the 80s, I remember reading a quote from Thompson Highway, envisioning that now that there was a Native theater company in Toronto, within 5 to 10 years, there'd be a Native theater company in every major city across the country. We have about 5 or 6, but it is growing. And so I feel like that Native Earth really, when reading from Thompson's early interviews, it was really about supporting the artists, Native artists that were in Toronto, and having a home for them, to develop Native literature that didn't exist before that, Native plays, what they called the Committee to Restore the Trickster. It was the original gathering of poets and playwrights and short story writers, and that has happened. I know for me, moving from Alberta to Toronto about a decade ago, I didn't know Native theater existed. I had gone through theater school. I had been working professionally. A friend and colleague, Lauren Cardinal, said, "Hey, you should go check out Native Earth." I'm like, "Oh, what's this? Okay, go in." And met the artistic director at the time, and I was like, "Wow, Native theater?" They're like, "Yeah, go to the library, Thompson Highway, Drew Hayden Taylor, Daniel David Moses." And I went, took out stacks and sat them on the table and was just blown away. And so Native Earth did that. It created a home for artists in Toronto. And when I moved there, I met Aboriginal artists from Alberta, BC, who had to go to Toronto to get that support, to get that exposure, to get together with other Aboriginal artists. But 32 years later, Native Earth is that, and it has succeeded to the point that last year we've moved into a brand new building, and we now have our own theater. We have our own offices. Debaj Majig was the first Native performing arts organization to get a building and a performance space, and now we have it in a major urban center. So one of my goals for Native Earth is to expand beyond just Toronto. for Native Earth to become a leader at the national stage, to become a hub for Aboriginal artists in Canada and the Aboriginal arts organizations that are popping up across Canada and have been around across Canada. We're actively pursuing an Aboriginal touring network. I'm actually going to Calgary tomorrow for another gathering of that to establish a cohesive network of the Aboriginal organizations that have been functioning in kind of silos and on their own, so that we can weave this web and support each other with the resources. But even beyond that, my goal is for Native Earth to become a leader on the international stage as well, not just to support the work that's coming out of Native Earth, but to support all of the Aboriginal artists in Canada, to use our resources and our history for the community, and to help disseminate that information and the art that's being created in this country, which is so amazing, and to get it onto the world stage.
Well, best of luck to you. Thank you, Ryan. Thank you very much. Ryan Cunningham is the Artistic Director of Native Earth Performing Arts, and that just about does it for Before Play. Thank you very much to all of you for coming. And we hope to see you in the theater. And just a reminder, as if you needed a reminder, the box office is open. So thanks for sharing some of your Saturday morning with us. Thank you.